When we last left the Lamplight Investigative Services, a new case had slid under their doorstep in the form of Rose Weatherby, daughter of recently deceased Viola Weatherby, a well-known inventor, alchemist, and prominent member of society. Following Rose's directions, Joe Gilmore met with the proprietor of a boarding house in Nova named Zeb. During that time, Mama Amaretta and JJ pored over newspapers to find information about Viola Weatherby, which unearthed some interesting questions. What was the heart malfunction her husband died from? And what was this gadget that she was slated to reveal at an upcoming science symposium? We find our investigators on a new day, mulling over these clues and searching for answers.
Mama Amaretta finds herself in her car driving to the clinic in Cypher City. It is a community clinic that was created specifically for people who probably couldn't pay to go to the hospital, needed help outside of insurance, and Mama Amaretta's brother Antonio sometimes offers his services at this clinic. So Mama Amaretta is on her way in her car over to this clinic from Lamplight Investigative Services. She pulls up to the entrance. It is not a building that stands out at all. It is brick. It is square. It is one story. There's nothing about it that would call attention to it in any way. Everybody knows it for what it is because it's supposed to be known in that sense. But there's no signage. There's not like a neon flashing light like there often is in Nova dictating what this is. It is simply known as the clinic. And so Mama Amaretta pulls her car up to the front drive, steps out, and can enter into the clinic of Cypher City.
Amaretta's gonna hobble in with her cane, kind of leaning a bit of weight on it just to make it seem like, you know, it's actually serving a purpose rather than sticking by her side for the other reason she actually has it. And she will make her way into the clinic because I assume the staff is probably familiar with her face. If she's got questions, she's probably gonna go and pester her brother about it. So she'll walk up to the desk, the office attendant. Is Antonio available at the moment, or is he busy with a client, perhaps?
There is probably a middle-aged woman at this table who you are aware of is named Maria, and she kind of looks up from the desk, smiles at you, very aware of who you are, and says, I actually do believe he's in with the patient right now, but if you can just wait a couple minutes, he'll be right out and can talk to you without a problem.
Appreciate it, Maria.
And she'll just go and wait patiently and see maybe if there's like a little newspaper article or like some magazine. She's going to pick that up and just be like, what's going on?
You open this newspaper, and I think that between the time of you and JJ examining old newspapers and you coming to this office, there wasn't a lot of time for you to read today's newspaper. You know more about the death of Viola Weatherby than this paper is letting on. It is quite vague in its detailings. You see something about maybe in another week or so, there's going to be another shutdown of public services for their monthly review. The city will go on a little, it'll have an alert, as it usually does, through the speakers, saying that the trains are going to be shut down, or the lights are going to be shut off, or the speakers are going to be shut down for a certain amount of time. But they are worrying about that fairly early. You see an article about the symposium that you recently found out about, and about how they are unsure yet who is going to fill the spot of the late Viola Weatherby. But that is kind of how you can bide your time in the few minutes until your brother steps out of one of the patient rooms. He's like a 50-something middle-aged man. Has fairly decent good looks, graying hair, chiseled chin. Has been working as a doctor for so many years you've pretty much forgotten. And he has always had a special place in his heart for pro bono work, to give people medical care that they may not have access to otherwise. So it was very unsurprising when he joined up with this clinic. But he strides out of the office, drops a clipboard into a slot at the nurse's desk, and you watch as Maria mentions that you are waiting for him. He turns around and he looks at you. Ha! Huh. Yes.
Amaretta's gonna smile, get up, and pull her brother into, you know, a hug is a hello. It's good to see you all, though. Fortunately, today I'm here on business. Not an injury, luckily, this time, but something else.
Well, I'm very glad that I don't have to patch you up, but how about we go into my office and we chat a little bit?
Sounds good.
You follow him down the hallway, turn left, into a smaller room that contains simply a desk, a couple chairs, and that's it. But you take a seat in one of the chairs across the desk from him, and he says, "Well, whenever you come calling, I know it's important. So what do you have to ask of me?"
"Well, I read up on something interesting. So, you know, I don't know if you saw the newspaper this morning, but the situation with Mrs. Weatherby."
"Oh, I actually haven't had time to read this morning.
Well,
do you mind catching me up?"
"Well, fortunate news about Viola Weatherby is that she's passed on. And not in a pleasant way either, but I was doing some digging on the situation. You know me and how nosy I get. So, started doing some digging and found that her husband passed with something known as a heart malfunction. And I know heart failure is definitely a common cause for a lot of people passing, but heart malfunction made me pause. And I was wondering if you might know something more than I don't."
Kind of sits back in his chair, takes that in, that phrasing specifically. "Well, I do know what you're talking about. Unfortunately, this was something that I signed a contract about many a year ago when it happened. And I do have to say that I had told them my issues with the whole process in general. But it was going to save a man's life. So I ended up going through with it. If Viola Weatherby has passed, I think it is only in her honor that I tell you what happened."
"I'd appreciate that, Antonio."
"So, she is a very interesting woman. There are a lot of things that she has been working on that I would never have ever signed off on, have implemented. But this one specific thing, we both thought it was going to work. And so, she came in here with her husband a few years back. And had a contraption with her that was supposed to fix his heart problems. So, I opened it up and I inserted this gadget inside. It pretty much was a function that it clasped around his heart, and it became his heart for him. That was the purpose of it. His heart was going to fail if we didn't do anything. But unfortunately, when it all came down to it, his heart stopped working because the gadget she made malfunctioned. And so, that little slip-up in the newspaper wasn't for our best benefit. It drew too much attention. We tried to ignore it, and we did for a long time. But as you can see, you have called it to attention now. She saved him, to be clear. She created it for him. It saved his life. And unfortunately, the thing that saved his life ended up ending his life. Well,
I mean, I'm the last woman to judge somebody for doing whatever they can to save their husband.
There's a moment of silence in which Antonio obviously doesn't know what to say to you. It has been years since Dimitri went missing, and your brothers have done their best to comfort you in that time. But after not being able to for so long, there is an uncomfortability now in how to deal with that. And so that kind of just sits in this silence for a minute.
Well, I appreciate you being honest with me, Antonio. I know it ain't easy sharing a truth that you signed and promised to keep quiet about, but I think it is important, especially now that she's gone, and well, I'm just trying to figure out what happened. Even if it ain't my business, but it is my business.
If you've been hired, then it's your business. Of course.
Amaretta's gonna shrug at that. She's not. Her brother knows her enough to know that it really could be a coin toss into whether she's just looking into this on her own accord or she was actually hired to do something about it. Because she is nosy and he knows that.
I will always lend a helping hand whenever I can. You know that.
I know. And I think everyone sees it, and we all very much appreciate what you do for us, Antonio. Every person that comes across you.
Well, I don't do it for the reputation. But if this can help you in what you're looking for, then that's information you should know. I will say, it wasn't a cover-up. If you dug a little bit deeper, you would have found it. We weren't trying to hide it. She simply didn't want...
Just didn't want to make a fuss over nothing.
Didn't want to make a fuss over nothing. This wasn't created for anybody but him. She made this to save his life. She didn't want to mass produce it. She didn't want to sell it to anybody. It was a one and done type of thing.
That's good to know.
Just unfortunately, didn't turn out in their favor. I was there at the end. And he wasn't mad.
Well, I just hope he went peacefully then.
I think he did.
That's good. You should come over sometime. I can make you some supper or something if you want. I know you're busy.
Oh, I really got it. I know I'm busy, but you know, I'm not going to turn down a free supper.
Well, good. Then you come calling by my house.
Maybe in a few days, I'll give you a call.
Sounds good. I'll see you then, Tony. Thank you again, and I hope everything goes well for the rest of your day.
Stands up from his desk, and as you initiated the first hug, you watch him decide whether or not to come around the desk and initiate another hug, but he instead opts for an awkward hands-up wave you out of the room.
I'll give him a little wave as well. She knows where her brother is. She's like, I get it.
Unfortunately, the trolley in Cypher City is not the most reliable. But you're used to that. So JJ jumps on her rollerblades, rollers to the pickup spot that's closest to Lamplight Investigative Services, has to wait like 37 minutes. But again, she's used to it. So when it arrives, and it's run down, clattering glory, JJ jumps upon it and rides it all the way back around Cypher City, all the way over the Golden Mile and into Nova. And so jumps off at the appropriate spot, which means she has another 10 minutes to rollerblade until she gets to her friend's house. JJ has known Onyx for a significant amount of time. They grew up together. They went to the same school for a very long time. JJ has continuously gone over to their house for dinner every week, despite the fact that Onyx currently resides in their family home alone, because their parents are a little bit more concerned with what Joe is concerned with, which is scientific research and gadgetry. You blade up to Onyx's house, and it is what you would consider a mansion. It is behind a wrought iron gate. It consists of like 3 to 4 stories. You're never actually sure, because you think you've been to all of them, but from the outside, looks a little bit different than it looks from the inside. And you see that the lights are on inside. And you come up to the front door. You give it a little knock, like you usually do. And the door opens. And behind the door, you see this completely purple furred individual with a tail, almost like a tiefling, where the end comes to like a point. And she is wearing a wonderful floral apron over her fur. And you can also tell through the apron that the chest is like a lighter lavender than the rest of it. And the door opens and she appears. And you know this person is Marigold. She is the Dredge's maid, butler, slash person who pretty much does everything for them when they are away. JJ, so nice to see you again. Which is the same thing she says every week when you arrive.
And I think similarly to every week when I arrive, JJ's like waiting at the door like someone's gonna open this door and say hello and I'm gonna greet them in the correct way that you greet a person. And then when it's Marigold, the like tension kind of, hi, how's it going? No one's here?
Well, it's the same as it always is. You like to see Onyx?
And, yes, absolutely. There's just no car in the driveway. I just have some questions, and I have a letter that I need to mail. But I can mail it at my house. It's just, I don't know, I feel weird mailing something to Onyx's parents from my house.
I can mail it for you if you'd like to.
That would be amazing. And
do you want dinner? Because it hasn't been put on, and you usually want dinner. So we can put it on for you if you'd like.
I won't say no to dinner, but I don't want to put you out. You don't have to, but you do make.
Well, I'll get that started for you. Onyx is up. Well, not in their room, but in their other room. So you can find it. I think you know where that is.
I'll only get lost twice on the way.
If you do, you know, just go over to the wall and ring the bell and we'll come and find you.
And at that, I think JJ's eyes do widen a little bit of like, oh, I forgot that this is, holy shit.
Despite the fact that you come to Onyx's house every week on rote, it consistently changes.
Thank you again, Marigold. And I'm gonna go, and I think JJ like starts going in a direction and then like looks and like the staircase is in the other way. Did you guys get new flowers? That's so, like, trying to play it off, kind of, as, like, I'm just looking at this.
The staircase has actively switched spots since you were here the last week. It is the same staircase, though. It is a beautiful, marble staircase, probably about like 23 steps up, about 3 feet wide, has a beautiful golden gilded handrail up the side of it. So it's the same staircase. It is simply located in the opposite side of the room that it was before.
Man, you guys know a lot about decorating. I sometimes look at stuff like that and go, man, I wish that was somewhere else.
As you say this, you notice that you're kind of speaking and your voice is just echoing because Marigold has walked off into a further room to start the dinner preparations for you.
There's no more audience, JJ. This is so fucking weird. all right, let's the second bedroom. So that's the one on the second. No, the first bedroom is on the second floor. The second bedroom's on the third floor, the fourth door down. Yeah, okay.
You start your way up the marble staircase. You get to the top of it. You go down the hallway, and you find yourself at a familiar wrought iron spiral staircase. And you start up it to the third floor of the abode. And down the third floor hallway, on the fourth door.
Yeah, I'll do a like, dun 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 dun.
And you hear back, not in a knock, but in a very loud and boisterous voice, dun dun!
I'll open the door.
And you see, standing in the middle of this room, they have a massive pair of spectacles on that are like 4 inches wide. It's like a welding mask with those on top of them, looking at something in the middle of this room at a table. You see your friend, Onyx. And they do not look up at you, despite their obvious reaction to your knock. And they are still looking at whatever it is they're looking at as you walk into this room.
Oh, there's a ghost in your room that just happened.
Yeah, okay, shut up, JJ. What's going on?
Well, we didn't really decide on a day last week, so I decided to show up because we don't really decide on a day any week, and I just kind of show up. So, I have a few questions and also a letter, but I think Marigold already took care of the letter.
They pull their little mask up to the top of their head, and you see a fairly narrow face, wide eyes, very dark brown skin, has pointed ears, has teeth that are not tusks necessarily, but they are all pointed. Kind of smiles, and their smile is a little bit of a creepy grin at all times.
We never really make a date for these things. I just kind of expect you to show up when you show up. So what do you want to talk about?
First, how was your week? And I think JJ is doing a similar smile of like, and both like fangs are just kind of like, yes, we are excited. We are excited together.
Onyx is in this almost like brown overall type of thing because they're working. But you can see that it covers like a very nicely made like silk gray shirt over like linen pants. Like it's like a very nice outfit that has been covered by like a Carhartt overall type of situation. They put down what they're working on. It clatters. They're very unceremonious about it. So it clatters to the table. They walk around it and they go, okay. And they fall into this very old and worn brown leather chair that has like the leather ripped off of it in places. And they spread their arms out and they go, my week has been great. Nothing to complain about. But obviously you got something on your mind that I'd like to hear.
Well, and I think JJ like walks over to the like table and like picks something up. It's not the main thing that got dropped, but maybe it's like two rings that are together and just like picks it up and starts like twisting it around and like fidgeting with it. Nothing much has happened. I mean, we like solved some cases. We got some new cases. A lady got murdered. And I...
Stop. Oh, what?
A lady.
A lady?
Got murdered.
Got murdered.
And she was an inventor?
And we're just gonna, like, throw that out in casual conversation amongst friends? Just, like, thrown out into the ether?
You're so right. And JJ will, like, sit in front of the chair and just go,
This week, there was a woman who was murdered.
Okay, well, that's too formal, but you know what I mean.
How do you tell someone that? Well, I'll tell you how. Okay, so her daughter shows up, 2 a.m. I'm at the office for reasons. Maybe that reason was that I was sleeping at the office. Who's to say? Not me.
The bed is right there, and they point over to a, like, very poorly set up air mattress with ripped blankets, like, just old, like, something that, like, they probably just grabbed from, like, an old closet or off the street, honestly. And it's not well made, but you do know that you could sleep on it if you wanted to.
How am I gonna rollerblade here at, like, midnight when we finish cases?
Well, you wouldn't, because you would just be here.
But then I would have to rollerblade to work.
But that's fine, I get it, because I also don't want you up in my fucking space all the time. I need my personal space, and I need to think and breathe. And so it's good, it's good, it's good. So what's going on? What'd you say?
Oh, what were we talking about?
A dead
murder. So the lady, gone. Daughter, at my office. In the morning?
Interesting.
I have to huff it to my boss's office. It was the only option. Don't let anyone convince you otherwise.
We do it sometimes.
We do it for the people. It's simply what we must do. And so I do it, and then my boss comes back, and my boss talks to the daughter of the lady that died, and I know her name. Somewhere in my brain. Famous inventor. Might have known her. Was about to give a big speech. Husband died of weird things. Joe knows her.
I mean, I'm really stuck up in my own workshop a lot of the times. I don't really think anybody else has anything to do with me. I like making my own shit. I like them keeping it themselves. So you're gonna have to really find that name for me.
I know. I'm gonna keep talking, and eventually I will remember. But, so she gets murdered. She has an assistant, but I think the daughter did it. Most important, I wanted to ask about. So there was, like, this mini steam engine thing, and Joe said so many words about it so quickly. But it was small, and you could take that little steam engine, and you could put it inside of something.
Did Joe make it?
No.
Okay. Well, whoever made it, I want a kiss on the mouth.
Well, that's weird, because she's a corpse.
Okay, well, I take it back, but I still, you know, it stands. And the fact that that's really fucking cool.
It sounds cool, but it also sounds like something someone would murder someone for. So, I sent this letter to your parents already. Well, I didn't send it.
What did it say?
Marigold sent it downstairs. It said, to Craig and Diane, but then I scribbled that out and I said, Dear Mr. and Mrs. Dredge, because I know your parents like me, but like, what if they didn't, you know? And so I want to still seem formal, but then I scratched it out and then I was like, they're gonna know, like they'll hold it up to light or something. And I heard that you could like hold up something to camp, like candle flame, and you could see words that have been like erased. So then I got rid of that letter and then I said, Dear Mr. and Mrs. Dredge. And in it, I put the name of this person. And I know it. I know the name so well. You wouldn't... Would
I'm not second guessing whether or not this is important to you, because I don't think you know the name.
It is important to me, and that is why I've forgotten the name. Really.
What? Is that how that works? Is that why? When I'm in the middle of making something, I sometimes forget how to make it because it's so important to me?
Yeah, and you thought about it too hard. You thought about it until your brain didn't want it anymore.
Do I have ADHD?
Yeah, because you forgot that you have ADHD. And I've been telling you this since forever.
Okay, well, do you think you can talk to Mama Aretta and, like, see if her brothers can get me some drugs for that?
Probably. I bet that there are better drugs that you could get here. Quite honestly. You don't even have to, like, go in for anything. I'm sure you could just show up and probably talk for a minute, and they'd be like,
See, I don't like doing that. Because, like, it gives me a reputation I don't want to have amongst the quote-unquote elite of Nova City. I don't want them to think they're my friends.
I thought you were saying that you didn't like the going in and talking to a doctor part.
Well, I also don't like that, but that's actually not the biggest issue, because somebody's going to see me walking into that doctor's office, and then at the next event, they're going to have a lot of fucking questions for me that I don't want to answer.
Tell them that you had diarrhea. No one asks more questions once you've said you've had diarrhea.
Well, that's a little bit more invasive than I want to be. Anyways, please continue your diatribe.
Oh, I had a diatribe. I think JJ turns to the side, and there's like a guitar or something with strings. Viola Weatherby. Viola Weatherby is dead, and her daughter needs us. Nope, I never met her daughter. And you don't know that I met her daughter because I didn't.
So I'm going to need you to use the mask to see if you can persuade Onyx to not realize that you actually know who this person is. So roll 2d6 plus the number that is your wit, so plus 1.
The total is 10 plus 1, so 11.
So you get to choose two of these options. They believe a big lie, which is you don't know who this woman's daughter is, as you have stated. The lie you have chosen is unexpectedly perfect, creating a new opportunity, and or they give you the benefit of the doubt and remain convinced even if there is some evidence of your lie.
I'm going to go with the last two because I think it's less like you really truly know that I never met this daughter, and more of a like, if anyone asks me, I'll say that you didn't.
Okay. Well, I mean, I know that Miss Weatherby was working on some stuff that like was pretty crazy according to the world. But, like, I wasn't really working on it with her, so I don't have a lot of intel.
Do you know anything about the Weatherbys? They do things.
I mean, Viola Weatherby is, like, one of the biggest and the best in the business right now. And, like, she's fucking dead, you said? 'Cause that's heart-wrenching.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Viola Weatherby has more knowledge and understanding of gadgetry than anybody else in the business. So we're now fighting compensation with knowledge, and it's never really met equally. And it's kind of a fucking mess. And so I just think that she was a super cool woman. That if she ever wanted our help, I would have given it to her. But I think that my parents scared people off too much that they won't even come to me now to answer their questions.
Well, if it's any consolation, I do think you've kind of won now.
I was not invited to the symposium.
What do you know about the symposium?
That I wasn't invited to it, and it feels like a pretty big slight on everybody's part. Not that I'm working on anything important, because I'm not, because I don't have any fucking ideas right now. It's like a dead zone in my brain.
Ice cream, but you make it by riding a bicycle.
God, that would have been just even that would have been so much better than anything I've got going on.
Smoothies, but you make them by riding a bicycle.
Anyway, so the symposium is like the biggest event that the college puts on, like, every 4 years, okay? So when you're invited, it's like a big deal, because you might not get invited in 4 years, because maybe you don't have an idea. And granted...
Like you.
Okay. JJ, do you want me to kick you out of my house? Because I also didn't have an idea last year, and it's making it feel like you're rubbing it in a little bit.
You didn't have an idea last year, but isn't it every 4 years?
Sorry, last time. Well, then the problem is I had a great idea last year.
Last year you were working on the paintball gun that like can also make you jump higher.
That's the problem with the symposium is that my ideas happen between the 4-year span when they should happen.
That is kind of rude of them. the fuck? I hate colleges.
The point of the symposium is that, like, the students there at Arcadia get to, like, show what they've been working on for that semester. Right? But then also, they invite these incredible inventors. So the entire point is to, like, do something that's so big that you will get invited to the symposium. And apparently, Weatherby did it.
Yeah, because Weatherby invented that, like, steam thing that Joe knows a lot about that can power little machines.
Yeah, well, you know, the steam thing is a thing. The steam thing has been a thing. That's not what she was going to take to the symposium. No one knows what she was going to take to the symposium.
Oh.
I've used the steam things. They're fucking great. They're like little tiny steam engines to put in shit.
Man, I need to listen better when Joe talks.
There are a lot of reasons you should listen better when Joe talks, but I also understand the looking at Joe's face is like, you just immediately black out because it's so beautiful, you know?
Nerd alert.
Don't talk to me like you don't know what I'm talking about, JJ.
Listen.
Mister, I've walked into this trying to sleep in our agency and she's there and I won't sleep. Yeah, don't even start with me.
Well, because what if she needs something? Or what if she's like, I don't know, wants to talk?
What if she's hot? I get it. It's what happens.
What? There's no what if, okay? I have eyes. She's hot, all right? But there's nothing more than that. Like, I mean, sometimes we ride on the same motorcycle. What is this thing? JJ will, like, literally, like, jangle the, like, little pieces of metal in front of, like...
That's the inducing pendulum. I don't think you should touch that, because it's going to make you sick.
The seducing pendulum?
Inducing.
Inducing what?
But I should make that.
You should. Then you get invited to the thing. The symposium.
Well, I don't want to really, like, trip my way in. I think that I want to be taken on brains.
No. That's the thing you're bringing to the symposium. You're not seducing. Well, actually.
Do you want dinner right now? Because I'm kind of hungry. Did I answer your questions? Because I don't really know what question you came in with. I don't remember now.
Oh, I forgot what questions I asked. But I'm hungry, so, like, yeah, sure.
Onyx leads you down out of this workshop, down the little spiral staircase that is here, down the marble staircase, around the corner, through what you had thought was what you remembered to be where the servants' quarters were, but they were not that. It is now the dining room that has been set up in a glorious manner. Like, there are, like, 10 chairs at this table. But there are two place settings and, like, 27 candles. And it's so stupid.
Onyx and I always sit at the at the heads of the table. And it's, like, since we were kids. Because we're like, nope, we're like vampires right now. This is great. This is amazing.
This episode of Queer PG is brought to you by Publishing Goblin and their new game, Confluence: The Living Archive. Confluence is a genre-bending game of fantasy, sci-fi, and horror, built to tell character-driven stories. Explore the beautiful and original setting of Ajuria, where phenomena called confluxes bring people together, space and time be damned. Use magic alongside technology to cook your favorite meals, rebel against corrupt power systems, explore sites long forgotten, and create colorful characters and companions for your next journey. Confluence is an original D6 dice pool engine with fully customizable character creation that drives and changes with the narrative you tell. The story leader guides the players with the help of the Atlases, a setting guide full of in-universe documents and stories to uncover, to fully immerse the table in the mystical, whimsical, and colorful world of Ajuria. With a team of almost 100% queer folks, a Confluence RPG and a Queer PG partnership seemed inevitable, and we are very excited about watching this game come to life. Confluence RPG is on BackerKit now. Check out the link in the description to see how you can support Publishing Goblin and their new game, Confluence: The Living Archive.
The mists roll across the valley, over the bodies of hundreds of dead, as a large figure rises above the mountains, too large to be anything mortal. Enter Pocket Bard, immersive audio made easy. With an ever-expanding music library, Pocket Bard has made soundscaping for your TTRPG needs seamless and so very simple. The easy-to-use app provides you with scenes that include ambiance, weather patterns, quick and easy sound effects, as well as backing music with just a touch of a button. Transitioning from town to a long travel journey? Don't worry. A large selection of the music and soundscapes adjust to your adventures, transitioning seamlessly into the next scene. You'll unlock a wide variety of music for all genres of play so that you can weave an incredible tapestry that'll make playing at your table even more memorable than it already was. Check out Pocket Bard at www.pocketbard.app or head to your nearest app store on iOS or Android to access the magic right now.
Have you been wanting to bring your home games to the next level? Maybe you're looking for the perfect holiday gift for the TTRPG-loving person in your life. Well, during the Hero Forge Black Friday sale, you can get savings as big as the stories you tell. Maybe you're a DM and you want to gift something physical to your players of their player characters in your campaign. Or maybe you're a player and you want to give the gift of an NPC in the form of a miniature. You can save 20% on physical miniatures and accessories, such as their iconic color plastic miniatures, their new, super cute custom acrylic keychains, or their 3D printed custom dice, as well as 50% on digital miniatures and STL files. The sale ends December 1st, so don't delay! Restrictions apply. Head to heroforge.com/sale for more details.
Your next favorite game is on My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Ho, 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 and welcome to My First Dungeon.
From Sad Space Cowboys.
Kamari takes out a lighter from their pocket and goes, this bar's next.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let's go.
To death metal Viking cats.
Hello Kitty, you see Melody Tuffington flying through the air, jacked as shit, massive legs, to horny snowmen?
The sad part is that Joshua never gave Frosty a penis.
No.
And everything in between.
It was a dark and stormy night.
We've got something for everyone.
You're a special Gertrude girl. In a special Gertrude world, happy birthday, happy birthday! I'm not a skeleton.
Learn the game, then hear it in action.
That's Snake Eyes minus two, that's a zero.
Snake Eyes, that means that we have our very first plot twist. Anytime somebody rolls doubles, we get a plot twist.
So grab some headphones.
And get lost in a story with us.
I'll be honest, I don't know all the rules of it. We'll kind of figure that out as we go. But do you want to just play? I've got some great stories to tell you.
And remember,
if you're having fun, you're already doing it right.
Oh, fuck!
Joe has taken it upon herself to go to the circus and find out what information she can from there. The circus is a bar, a club, a burlesque space. If you were looking to find anyone, someone at the circus would have the answers for you. Whether or not they tell you, well, that depends on you. It boasts an array of clientele and is the usual meeting spot for any dealings that are looking to be made. Gratefully, this evening is not as wet as the evening before. It is still overcast, but the rain is not falling as it was. It leaves puddles through the cobblestones. It leaves water dripping off of signposts. But it is not actively raining. And so Joe walks up to this club in a fairly put-together aura and walks in and is met with a live band, a bouncer already at like 7 p.m. shoving somebody outside. You walk into what looks to be a pretty shitty dive bar, is kind of what the outside of this space looks like. But once you get in, you realize that it is much more taken care of than that. In the backspace of this bar, you know, is a kind of burlesque club. It's kind of hidden. It's not like hidden as a secret, it's hidden in a sense of privacy. But you walk in here, and I think Joe knows a lot of the people here. Knows a lot of the workers, knows a lot of the patrons. I think possibly has specific relationships with certain people, but not with all of them. With a lot of them, it's just like, I know you because we all come here. But there are a few girls in this space that Joe has actively had relationships with throughout the years.
As Joe enters, she kind of shrugs off this coat that she has, and as she throws it over her shoulder, she says, David, you need any help?
Oh, I'm so good, Miss Joe, it's all good. Just somebody who didn't know where his lines ended and where ours met, so time to get out.
Joe gives, like, a little salute to the drunk man that's getting thrown out. She has thrown out many a drunk man herself and assisted David in many bouncing of rowdy patrons. She just insists that there is respect.
This also is a place in which they actively respect their burlesque dancers and performers, and so there's like a very thin line of like what is okay and what is not. And so while it is a dive bar, while it is a place that you can meet people for secrecy here, there is still an idea that you have a respect for the individuals who are working the establishment. And the funniest thing about this bar is that they have a running tally of the last time the sun shone in Cypher City. And currently, that tally is ridiculously high. It is at 39 days.
I think Joe walks past David and finds a comfy chair to sit in and sort of observe who is there and who's dancing, who's drinking, what state of drunkenness everyone seems to be in.
The dancers specifically are not in this portion of the bar. They are behind a wall in the next room. So you can't necessarily see that from this chair that you're in. But that's really not the most important point for you right now. And you see, I actually think Joe probably knows by face at least everybody in this bar currently. There are two bartenders behind this bar. It's a pretty long bar, actually. It probably has like two racks, and there are two bartenders back there who you know of as Fiona and Danielle. Then you see a smattering of individuals that would likely prefer you didn't know who they were during their time here. But that's really hard to do when you frequent the circus. And so, you know them, they know you. There is a lot of nods of acknowledgement to you. There is a lot of looks your way and quickly looking the other way. You do see, also, which isn't surprising, a couple roses scattered throughout. They don't seem to be doing any specific business. They don't seem to be waiting for anybody. They seem to simply be members of the roses that are in the bar currently.
Joe notices that it's Fiona behind the bar and while she remembers that Fiona was upset for some reason when she left, is still kind of unsure of why. And so she thinks they're probably still on good terms. So she heads over to Fiona, slides onto a stool, puts her arms on the bar. Hello.
So, as you slide into this seat, you see that Fiona already has the tonic pouring on top of the gin and passes it over to you. I feel like I need to apologize to you.
Do you?
Well, I just... See, I work here, and so I knew I would see you again. And I just feel like the way we left things was odd. And maybe it's just me who thinks they're odd. But I think, professionally, I would like to say I'm sorry and to move on from this.
Well, I'm not sure why you're apologizing. It was odd. We left things in an uncomfortable manner. But I'm not quite sure why.
I think maybe I don't know either, and so I think the best way to deal with it is to apologize. If that's not the way to deal with it, then perhaps we forget about it?
That's usually my choice. And she raises her drink up to forgetting.
You watch Fiona grab a small shot glass from under the bar top, pour gin in it, and tap you and take a shot back.
So, have you heard the news?
That's a question to ask one of us. And you watch her look down at the other bartender and look back at you. I've heard a lot of news.
Oh, really? She sort of raises one eyebrow.
Joe, this should not be a surprise.
What have you been hearing?
Honestly, I heard that you are looking into somebody's death. Which is not something you obviously want people to know, I would think.
That's true. Would you mind telling me who informed you?
I can't tell you that, no.
She rolls her eyes, but I was hoping that you'd make an exception.
If I make an exception for you, then I have to make an exception for everybody who comes into this bar looking for my favor.
But I do have your favor, don't I?
I think that this is not one of your playbook moves. I think that you have to roll to entice, which is a heartstring move. So when you appeal to someone's physical or emotional sensibilities, you roll your heart. So 2d6 plus your heart.
It's a 6. Can I spend a string on her to make it a 7?
Fiona gets to choose one of these, or you can get another string on her.
Let's just choose one, then.
She's going to promise something that she thinks you want. You know what, Joe? You need to be more confident in your own abilities, because Jack has been around.
Joe takes this in. Well, we do keep different hours.
Let me just say that she's been around more often than any of us are used to. I think she's looking for you.
Looking for me? Joe grins and slides some money out of her pocket across the bar to Fiona. That's not for the information. It's for the drink.
Is it for the kicking me out of your apartment very early this morning?
Joe reaches in and brings out more money and puts it across the bar. Are you now expecting her? Tonight?
Well, not right now. She was already here. She left.
Did she say where she was going?
She didn't speak to me.
Rude of her. Joe finishes her drink and, gently slides it over to Fiona. What times has she been arriving? Is it regular? Is it...
She's too smart for that, I think. I've seen her the past few nights, around 10. Tonight, I saw her around 5. But she doesn't... Once she leaves. She's done. There's also a difference between Jack being here for casual times and Jack being here for business, and I think the first is what was happening.
There are a lot of business people here tonight.
Jack doesn't order a gin drink if you're not here. And she ordered one for the past 3 nights.
Interesting. Well, perhaps I should give her a call. Thank you, Fiona. Do you know who's dancing tonight?
Melanie. Coretta. I think actually that's the only two. The rest of them called off this evening.
Are they all right?
Well, as far as I know. No one's hurt. No one has been taken advantage of.
Good. You know, you can always call me if anything gets too rough.
That's... Yeah.
I love David, but...
No, sorry. That's why I was confused, I think, this morning.
I'm sorry.
Because I know that... No, it's fine. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day. It was just a very confusing half an hour. We're good, I promise.
The light bulb, like, finally goes off in Joe's head. Oh, Fiona, I wasn't rushing you out because
It's fine.
It was, like, genuinely, it was the machine. I apologize. My gadgets have my heart.
And it would be terrible of me to think otherwise. So it was just simply a very confusing morning, and I have moved past it, as I believe you have. So... We're fine, I promise.
Well, that's good, because you make the best drinks. Wouldn't want to be without you.
Well, I make the strongest drinks, so.
Speaking of which, could I have a second?
Amaretta will kind of lightly clap her hands together, maybe set down her little cup of tea she's fixed for herself, pondering over what to do. All right, kids, we have the key to get in, which means it's going to be a lot easier to explain our presence because we didn't get a key from just anybody. However, there is still going to be the issue of explaining our presence. Now, few solutions in mind. We could go at an hour where we think ain't nobody gonna walk in on us. Make sure we don't move things around too much so that people that are still looking around don't notice anything's been poked about. Or we could try and wait a day or two. That's a little bit riskier because things could get cleaned up by then. But we could wait for some contact information from this Arthur fella and see if he can get us the right permission to get in. But those are my current plans at the moment beyond just the key and everything. But I want to hear what you folks have to say, and if you got any ideas, I'm more than happy to listen. And if it works, I'm more than happy to use it.
We can't wait. We can't. Rose is waiting on us. And the police could change the crime scene at any point. We are actively losing evidence every moment that we are not there. I'm thinking disguises.
My plan also has to do with disguises.
So what kind of disguises are we thinking of?
Well, there's a few options. We could be crime scene cleanup crew, then no one is supposed to know who we are, so that works out really well in our favor. We have a key, which also makes sense. The police gave us a key so that we could come in and clean up any, like, bodily fluids. Issues. If there is no bodily fluids and then they question us on it, there's no bodily fluids, but then we can just say, you don't know where the bodily fluids are. They told us where they are. We could pretend to be enforcers, but then we have to dress up as enforcers, and that's kind of gross.
Also illegal. Worth pointing out.
So is breaking in.
We're not breaking in. We have a key.
Exactly. We're walking in.
So is using a key to get in a place that we don't have permission to be.
Is it? I mean, technically, doesn't the lab now belong to Rose? And she's the one that gave us permission. I know that we are going into an active crime scene, but perhaps we don't know that? How would we know? Rose just told us to go there and clean. Well, maybe perhaps we shouldn't say that. That might get her into a bit of trouble, actually. Should we call her?
We're not supposed to call her.
I suppose we'll have to call Zeb. Or whatever his name is.
I think it was Zeb. Let me check.
No, I know his name is Zeb.
The matriarch has a move called family meeting. When you assemble your family, they will tell you what they think about the current situation or team. If you take their advice, you can clear a condition or mark experience. If you do not, you choose someone who prefers the course you choose and give them a string.
I mean, I suppose the plan of disguising ourselves as like a cleaning crew of some kind and articulating why we're there when it happens, because we have a general bullshit lie of we were told to clean.
I'm going to let you mark 1 XP for allowing this plan to happen. The evening of the second night begins to fall upon you all. You need to find out more information about what happened during this crime, about who it happened to. There's a lot of information hanging in the balance right now. The only information you have is a name of a assistant and the key. That second part truly kind of hooks you all. When you all walk up to the address that is this lab, it's quite obvious that this is not the only lab in this building. It is a very large space. It is almost like a half moon dome. There is a beautiful garden out front. There are probably like 7 floors to this place. You have a key to a room. You don't have a key to a building. And so you walk in through the front doors that are open. And as soon as you walk in, though, there is a man behind a desk. What's your name? Business utility.
My name's Julianne. It's very nice to meet you. I'm sorry, we're just actually looking for the lab. I believe the enforcers were here for the last couple days. We actually just got hired to come in, pick up some of the, like, they left some boxes that say, like, I think they say evidence on them, and then we're supposed to return those. But we're mainly here just to clean up, you know, get the room returned to you guys, really, is what we're here for, is make sure that's usable by the next person that needs it.
Roll me the mass. So roll me 2d6 and add your wit to it.
Ooh, that's a 9 plus 1, a 10. I want them to believe it, no questions, and I would love if the lie I have chosen is unexpected.
I'm so glad you guys showed up. It's been a mess here for so long. Here's the key. Hands you another key. Please go up. It's first floor. So easy to spot. Just get rid of all the shit in it, please. I just can't deal with it anymore.
And I think JJ will like reach across and like, I am so, so sorry that we were not here sooner. Honestly, sometimes, don't tell anyone I said, sometimes the enforcers, they just make these things drag. You didn't hear it from me. It's just...
Well, you didn't hear it from me, but you're right. You walk past the entrance to this building, and you see that there are 3 different entryways. They all list a specific floor they go to, and the first 2 would deal you well. The 3rd one apparently doesn't go to the floor that you're looking for, but it is stairs, and it is an elevator, like in the old sense of an elevator, where it's like a cage, does need somebody to maneuver.
Joe definitely doesn't even like elevators in general. There's like a kind of neurotic thing. So she immediately says, Stairs?
Stairs are good.
Brilliant.
You see that there's a door. It's wood, iron. It's got like a big circle with a lot of runes on it. There is a massive lock, an iron lock, on this door.
Oh no, there's a lock on the door. How will we get in? Just kidding, we have two keys.
She's gonna produce a key and then just go make sure there's no guards walking about that go to unlock the door, peek inside.
It's dark when you open the door. There are like large floor-to-ceiling windows that spread even further up, like an arched ceiling. The nighttime city lights come through in a blue-tinted haze because the glass in this room is all blue-tinted. So they shed little light upon the scene in front of you, but they do shed some light on a scene in front of you. There's a lever close to the door. It's like a full, like, hand push-up lever.
Can I get a closer look and see if I, like, Amaretta can kind of, like, trace back to where that lever goes to see if it, like, props open the door for actually traces to, like, a rudimentary alarm system so she's not accidentally activating, like, the fire alarm?
Jo takes her lighter out to help Mama see.
As Jo kind of brings her light out to shed a little bit of light on the situation, quickly obvious to both of you that this lever turns on a light.
I'm going to make sure everyone's in the room, and Amaretta's going to close the door shut behind them, and then she's going to flick on the light switch so they get a little bit more illumination.
When pushed up, these like globe fixtures hanging from the ceiling shine a dim yellow light down on everybody. There are a lot of smaller lights affixed to walls, sitting on desks. None of the equipment that seems to be currently running to a source for them. The floor is large red and black square tiles. There's an iron spiral staircase that leads up to not even a second floor really, but like a ledge upon which a desk sits. Jo, though, I think would see some gadgets that she would recognize, even if they were things that you have never been able to actively get your hands on. There's a riveted compass ophthalmoscope, an obviously hijacked gyroscopic juggernaut, and the list goes on. However, this place looks messy for a person. Like, it looks like it was left how it was left. It looks like it was just, like, left how everybody left it for this investigation. So there have been obvious treks into it from enforcers, but the actual space itself doesn't seem to have been impacted by that investigation. And so you are coming on to, like, a pretty fresh investigation of the space.
Jo comes in deeper into the room with the light that they turned on and also her own lighter. And she moves about the space in an almost reverent way. She really looked up to Viola, and a lot of the things that she's seeing are recognizable to her and familiar, and also things that she has imagined getting her hands on for a long time. And she gets so caught up in looking at sketches and machinery and pieces that were left, that for a moment she kind of forgets why they're here. And this, like, wave of sadness washes over her that she never got to meet one of her heroes. But then she does approach what seems to be, like, the main work desk, and she very carefully starts to try to look through them and see if any stand out to her.
As Jo begins to look through papers that are left in this workspace, Jo is standing over what Mama Amaretta can know and can conceive of is a pretty large blood stain, and has kind of ducked down to look more intrusively at that, and has found that the cause of death from Viola Weatherby is still up in the air. But I think that Mama Amaretta would without a doubt call the cause of death loss of blood.
Main cause of death was hemorrhaging. Now it's a question of what caused the hemorrhage. I'm gonna mark it out to the other two to make sure that they don't step in it, because then having foot tracks and blood is gonna be very bad for everybody. In the meantime, I think Amaretta is just gonna warn them about the blood stains and warn them to keep an eye out for anything else that's stained, making sure that if it is, they stay away from it so that they don't add their fingerprints to the scene. They are going to touch something because they did use like cleaning disguises. They probably have gloves, so they're not leaving their fingerprints everywhere. So I imagine they probably did bring some cleaning supplies too, so they can actually cover up their own tracks and have perfectly good reasons to have those supplies with them. So she's going to find any recent correspondence, like any letters or stuff that's like probably within the past week or so. Any recent logs that come from the invention so that you can see what was recently being worked on. And Arthur's contact information. And Zeke's too, she can find it.
You don't find enough information about the project that is about to go up. In the sense that you understand that it has been tampered with. It has been taken. I think though that you also find information on Zeke Emery. And the only way I can describe this information is completely confusing to you. It does not make any sense. Like, you cannot make heads or tails of what this correspondence means. So obviously Viola and Zeke had correspondence, but what it was is like super confusing to understand.
Interesting. It's like really weird three scientists flirting where they just tell each other like about their newest invention.
JJ is cleaning anything that doesn't look important because she feels really bad that guy was so upset.
Well, JJ is looking through the premises, sees Mama Amaretta taking notes, sees Joe, like, just walking about the room. JJ hears a noise. And you look, and you see that part of the floor has started to lift up, and the barrel of a revolver peeks through.
Guys?
You watch the floor of this room, like maybe 4 squares in total, be pushed up. You see the rounded edge of the barrel of a revolver peek through. Fancy running into you here. In pulling herself out of this apparent hidden door in the floor of Viola's lab is none other than JJ's ex and Joe's ex, Jack.
This series stars Kenzie Tartaglioni as the Game Master, Atlas Matthews as JJ August, Danielle Halen as Mama Amaretta, and April Conslow as Joanna Gilmore. You can help us out by listening and sharing, rating and reviewing, coming over to our Discord,
And lastly, joining our Patreon to get access to episode after shows, bloopers, and so much more. We're glad you're here to ring in our third year of telling stories. Thank you all so much for joining us for our new season.